This podcast is rated S for science and also for spoilers and swearing. There's going to be swearing.
Something is killing these people and sucking them dry.
Run! It's a stampede!
Welcome everybody to Cinematic Animalia, the podcast where we look at somebody's favourite movie monster, Ryan Reynolds impersonated ball of fluff, and go over how they might work in the real world by examining their ecology and their physiology. Today, we are looking at the world of Pokemon with the release of Detective Pikachu. But before we get to that, my name's Sam Perrin. I'm a PhD candidate at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. I also run ecologyforthemasses.com. With me today is freshly minted PhD candidate in America anyway. He's always been a candidate in my eyes.
You are too kind.
Adam Shashash, fellow Ecology for the Masses author and researcher at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. Congratulations, Adam. We were just talking about this before the show. You had a pretty smooth-ish run. Can you say that on... Should we say that, or is that going to get you in shit if you say it?
Nah, we can say that it went well. It was not an easy thing by any means, but it's over. I'm finished with it. I'm a candidate, and now all I have to do is write a dissertation, so...
Allow me to clarify. In a sequentially ranked hierarchy based on level of critical importance, the disparity between us is too vast to quantify.
Now, before we get into this week, we are Cinematica Animalia, and we do talk about animals in film. So we have to do the obligatory couple of minutes talking about Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, God. out of principle, I haven't watched that trailer. I know the broad strokes. I know what it looks like. I know the horrors. I've seen the many wonderful, wonderful recreations of what Sonic actually looked like. I've seen my favorite, I think, was giving Sonic the Steve Buscemi eyes, which is a nightmare. If you ever want to sleep again or ever be able to have, you know, sexual intercourse with anybody without imagining that, don't look at it. Because you won't not be able to look at it, because that's just what happens.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but look, I didn't play Sonic as a kid. I have no, you know, nostalgic attachment to it. I didn't think it looked that bad. I know I'm in the vast minority here, but I watched it and I was like, yeah, it looks fine. Eyes could probably be a bit bigger, legs could probably be a bit thinner, but whatever.
I think
my kid was just like, yeah, it looks Sonic.
I think it looked horrible. I, full disclosure, haven't played Sonic really since I was 14 or 15. Since then, the Sonic games have gotten shit, like really, really bad. And I also know that the Sonic community, like the fandom, that are really hardcore fans, are also some of the weirdest fandom on the planet. Like, they are furry level insane with how sexual they get. So yeah, it looks bad. My favorite thing, I think, that I've heard talked about on a couple of different podcasts is the conspiracy theory that this is all intentional as a marketing ploy. And this movie's coming out in November, sure, and they do CGI up until the last minute on these kind of movies anyway, but the theory is that they did this on purpose so that people would get really, really upset about it. It's getting a shit ton of press, obviously, and you know what they say, no such thing as bad publicity, and so they already had a plan to make this look better, and they're like, oh yeah, we're going to change it. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I don't think that any studio in their right minds would necessarily want that or be smart enough to do it.
Yeah. Fair enough, yeah. Okay, so on to this week. We're doing something a little different this week. We'll talk a little bit about the movie Detective Pikachu initially, of course, but full disclosure, I know next to nothing about Pokemon. I never watched the TV show as a kid. I never saw the movies. I never played the card game or anything like that. So I knew nothing. Adam, on the other hand.
I have been a fan of Pokemon since I was about 6 or 7 years old.
Hey. The app is glitching and it thinks you're a Pokemon.
What?
Better watch out. I'm gonna catch you.
Oh no. So what we're gonna do today, as opposed to the normal thing, is I've got a series of questions that I'm gonna ask. And Adam is gonna do his best to explain them. We'll go through some of the concepts. We've both seen Detective Pikachu. But obviously, you know, that really raised more questions than it answered for me. So We'll see how we go today. But in any case, Adam, do you want to kind of sum up the movie for us?
Yeah, so full spoilers for Detective Pikachu, obviously. I don't think there's really too much to spoil as far as there being, you know, a bit of a twist in there and maybe the third act kind of going in a way that I was not expecting and not in a good way necessarily. But all in all, it was a really fun movie. It was really cool getting to see these Pokemon like in the real world, quote unquote, and kind of interacting with people, which is really all I wanted from this movie. And I think they did a really, really good job of getting that right, from the Pokemon only saying their names to them all kind of acting differently depending on their species, quote unquote. And then the relationship.
Oh, so that's the thing, the Pokemon just saying their name.
It started in the TV show, the animated one. And I think it might have been an artifact of the first primary Pokemon you see, really. It's not the first one you see in the show, but like the first one you get a real sense of is Pikachu, Ash's Pokemon. And Pikachu only says Pikachu. Yeah. And I think they're kind of like, well, I guess all of them say that. I don't know if it was really to their plan or if it kind of built off of it, but that's all that happens.
Yeah.
And you see it in the movie, with some of them at least. Only with the cutesy ones or the crazy ones, like Ricolo, that weird green-looking one at the bar who screams at Pikachu when he orders a coffee.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, but yeah, look, the plot of the film is essentially there's a Pikachu who rocks up. He can communicate with Justice Smith's character, whose father has just died, and he's moved into Rhyme City.
Yep. Well, he's gone to Rhyme City to collect his father's belongings.
Yes, yeah, and they've got to kind of work together to solve this whole conspiracy. There's something involving a Mewtwo.
So Mewtwo is in the original games. He is one of the original 151 Pokemon. And I say he. I don't know. I think they gender him in the games, but it's just, I think he's always been a he. Kind of a man-made creation based off of the DNA of another Pokemon called Mew, which they say in the game. The movie, rather.
Right.
And this Pokemon is supposed to be the quote-unquote most powerful Pokemon there is, because it's been, like, enhanced. It's got crazy psychic abilities, and it's the only Pokemon, at least in the movies, that can talk to people normally, because it can communicate directly into your mind. And
this
movie is giving Mewtwo all kinds of different abilities you've never seen before, like the third act falling apart part, which, spoiler alert once again, putting people into Pokemon bodies. What the fuck was that about?
That was really
like strange. I get that Bill Nye's character wants to be able to do things again because he's been confined to a wheelchair because his body is falling apart because of some degenerative disease. But it has no justification beyond just something to happen in the third act. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't. Yeah. People aren't happy. The Pokemon are now gone because they're just their bodies. Their soul doesn't exist in the body anymore. It's weird.
Look, I didn't enjoy the film that much. It kind of wasn't for me. But I can see how if you were either A, a child, or B, are into Pokemon, you would love this. I totally get that.
Yeah.
But I am neither a child, despite what my mum might say. And
you're not?
Or B. No, apparently not. I'm legally over 30 at this point. And that excludes me from most children's discounts at movies.
Mm, an older man, you say.
Can't get a Happy Meal anymore.
You can if you ask.
But it's fine. Like, there's a couple of things I thought were dumb about it. For instance, the first one is there is a scene whereby Justice Smith's character, I think his name is Tim, is standing like at the top of this skyscraper. Pikachu is about the same level but outside and falls down.
Yeah.
Right? Before Pikachu hits the ground, he's levitated by this Mewtwo creature and then dropped back onto the ground. 1 second later, Tim is on the ground floor of that very same skyscraper. That motherfucker either jumped down a flight of stairs and landed at the
superhero
bottom
landed.
Of superhuman knees. Yeah, superhero landing at the bottom of the stairs. Or he ran the whole way down in like the amount of time it took Pikachu to fall down that.
I did not even notice that.
It was ridiculous.
I'm going to say there's fast elevators.
Yeah, fair enough. It's just a time dilation. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the second thing that really took me out of it was, so like I said before, he can communicate with his Pikachu, Tim, the main character. I'm just going to call him Justice Smith.
Yeah.
Justice Smith can communicate with his Pikachu from the start. And then he finds out at the end that as a product of, you know, Mewtwo being able to put Pokemon into...
people into Pokemon bodies.
Yeah, that his father was actually... had been put into his Pikachu's body.
Yep.
Now, how the fuck do you not recognize your father's voice? Like, I know they've been separated for a year, but you remember your father's voice. Like, that really just...
That's a really good point. I didn't even think about that. I think,
yeah.
I guess if you want to try to justify it, maybe it sounds different to him than what we're hearing, because it's just Ryan Reynolds playing this, but maybe through the lens of a Pikachu it sounds different, because Pikachu always has a very high voice. Maybe it could just be the fact that it's such a jarring thing that you don't even associate your father with this thing, despite it being his Pokemon partner. But if you heard your father's voice coming out of a dog, would you think, that's my dad's voice, or would you think this dog is talking?
I'd get myself checked out, to be honest.
You should do that, period, but yeah.
Yeah, I should do that, yeah, on a more regular basis, to be fair, but yeah.
Yeah, probably. Mm. You need help.
Yeah, it could be the whole Clark Kent Superman thing, whereby Clark Kent's just such a shabby idiot that nobody could possibly think he's Superman.
Exactly.
So like, why would you, you would subconsciously just discount the possibility that your dad is inside a Pokemon.
Exactly.
Exactly. But you think that, you know, once... Anyway, no. But look, that apart, it was fine. I wasn't bored in this movie, but yeah.
Like, Mr. Mime was great.
If you love Pokemon, you should go... Oh, yes. That scene was fantastic. That was my favorite part of the entire movie. Okay, so Adam, the first question I've got you for you today is, where the fuck did this all start? Like, how did Pokemon start?
So Pokemon started in the early 90s, and it was based off of Pocket Monsters, which got shortened to Pokemon. And I remember when I was a kid,
I never knew that. Pocket Monsters.
Yeah, Pocket Monsters.
Oh, no shit, okay.
That's actually what it's called in Japan, and I think this was just kind of an easy way to market it with some kind of cute name for America. Yeah, and then Nintendo is now the sole owner of the trademark. And it was, okay, yeah, the mid-90s, 1995, by a gentleman named Satoshi Tajiri. And when I first heard about this when I think it was 96 or 97, when we were at a family vacation, and my sister pulled out an Arcanine card, which is, if you see the little, like, fire dog, these little like orange dogs with red tails that the police have, that's a Growlithe. It evolves into an Arcanine, one of my favorite Pokemon from when I was a kid. It is awesome. But my sister had this card, she got it from our cousin, and I was like, what is this? And then not too long after that, I got the game Pokemon Blue, which was the first one you could get on the Game Boy, which is black and white. It was so much fun, and I've played almost every single game since then. And there's a new game coming out on the Switch this year, and I am very pumped for it.
Okay. What other media has it expanded to since? Because, I mean, obviously we had Pokemon Go, the app thing last year. There's been films.
Yeah. Oh, that was 3 years ago, son. That was a while back.
Was that 3 years? Yeah, 2016. Yeah.
Geez. It was bonkers. I don't know how it was over in Norway or when you were still in Germany, but I got it finally when I came back to the U.S. in 2016 in August, when I had a phone with actual mobile data. And I got to Fayetteville, which is a university town, and fucking everyone was outside catching Pokemon. It was insane.
Yeah. It was big in Norway as well. Not as big, because it didn't get released here for
a while.
Like 2 months. Yeah, and a lot of the wave had kind of faded by the time it kicked in, but it was still quite big. Like, there were a lot of IT people who got like patches or VPN so they could play it over in Norway. And it was crazy. I still have one of my professors who I dropped in on earlier this week just to get an idea of what the hell Pokemon was. He's a mad Pokemon Go fan.
Okay.
Like, you'll catch him playing that in lectures and that sort of shit. Like,
yeah, they have little devices. Yeah. It's this little like Pokemon ball shaped keychain that it vibrates whenever there's a Pokemon nearby. You can just click it so you can catch it without even trying to look at it. And my roommate last year had that. He's still mad about it. And the people here that still play it are crazy about it. And they go hard.
Yeah. So, but what else has it evolved to? Like, are there comics? Are there books? Are there...
I haven't seen anything with comics and books. It wouldn't surprise me, especially if they have them in Japan, maybe a manga or three. The first thing outside of the cards that I saw was the video game on the Game Boy, the original Game Boy.
Yep.
But then there was also the first Pokemon movie was in 2001, I believe. And there was also the Pokemon animated TV show, which Detective Pikachu himself sings a little bit of when he's kind of having a sad mopey moment. That is the original Pokemon theme song, which, if you haven't heard, do yourself a favor, look it up. That song is a banger. It will get you so pumped up. Holy shit, there's so much energy. People of our age, at least in the US, can always do that. And then, little fun fact. Sam, how much money do you think the Pokemon franchise has earned all time? Just in all realms.
In all realms. Okay, so...
In all media.
I mean, it's going to be... I'm going to say at least
11 figures. So that's in the hundreds of billions, right?
You're not far off. You're not far off. Pokemon as a franchise is the highest grossing media franchise of all time with $90 billion in revenue.
Okay. Well, yeah, I actually thought it would have been more just based off, like, for instance, I assumed they would have netted like $10 billion just off Pokemon Go and advertising and that sort of thing. But $90 billion, that is insane.
$90 billion in 24 years.
Jesus. Oh, 24, like, yeah, that's a lot. Fucking hell.
From inception to now. Yeah. And then, Pokemon, the movie was 2001. That was massive here in the U.S. I know being myself and everyone else my age being super, super excited when you went to the movies. I don't know if it was the same in Norway, at least for Detective Pikachu, but we got these little trading cards. And then with the original Pokemon movie, you got this really cool, like, this hieroglyphic looking Mew holographic card, which was super, super cool. And fun fact, that movie was the first movie I ever cried at.
Really? Okay.
11-year-old Adam was having a very emotional moment when Ash got frozen between Mew and Mewtwo and turned to stone, and all the Pokemon were crying, and so Adam started crying.
Aww. Well, I'm sure it was a very emotional moment, you fucking pussy. What? No, it's fine.
Basically.
Okay, so, moving on to the ecology now. What the fuck is this world? Like, are there other normal animals there?
No. Not to my knowledge.
It's just Pokemon animals.
Yep. Anytime you would see like a quote-unquote normal animal in the world, be that in the TV show, in the movies, it's always some Pokemon corollary.
Man, so the taxonomists of this world are just crap then.
They must be. Because it's all Pokemon. So, although, but like, we see plant life, like normal plant life, but not normal animal life.
That's weird. Also, there's normal, because there are plant Pokemon, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Bulbasaur is a pure plant type. It's grass type. Even though it's a little dinosaur with a plant on its back.
But what is that, the whole type thing? Like, what does that mean?
So, that is purely from the standpoint of battling these things. So, the original games had, I want to say, 7 types. There was normal, which is boring, fire, grass, water, electric, bug. No, bug wasn't a type yet. Ghost, poison, and ground and rock, I believe, were the original types. Flying was one as well, and dragon.
It sounds like old chemistry. You know how they used to think there were 4 elements?
Yeah,
like
the 4 fire, elements.
Wind, earth, and water. Hang on, fire, wind, earth, and water. Is that the Avatar? What, you know what I mean. Anyway.
Yeah, yep. That is the Avatar thing, but it's also the same like original element thought. So the way that these types work is that you have type advantages against other types whenever you're battling these Pokemon, because that's the whole point of the game series. It's a turn-based battle system, and you have the obvious ones where fire is weak to water. Water is weak to, not so obvious, water is weak to grass. Grass is weak to fire. Water is weak to electricity. Ground is weak to water. Flying is weak to rock. Fighting is another type. Then there's like the not so obvious ones, at least in the original game. Ghost was like the hardest one to fight because you could not hurt them with normal attacks, and they were immune to normal attacks.
Okay.
It's crazy. It gets in the newest games, there's new types, there's type combos.
So that's a taxonomy system based purely on combat.
More or less, yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, still, the number of Pokemon was a hell of a lot more than I thought there were. I was kind of, you know, rifling through a bunch of them.
But, it's getting close to 1,000. With these new games coming out later this year, it might be at 1,000 now.
Yeah. So what is this then? Is it just like a world that hasn't been properly explored? Because if they only know of 1,000 different creatures, then, I mean, vertebrates, anyway.
Yeah, also invertebrates. There's a lot of bug types.
But huge bug types, right?
Very like big. Yeah, the biggest one is probably, I want to say like 8 or 9 feet. It's like this giant centipede. Let me see how big that guy is.
Are there ants? Are there flies? Are there mosquitoes?
Yes. I don't know about mosquitoes. So there are ants. Mosquitoes. There are flies.
Okay. So it's not a world completely devoid of normal life. It's got trees. It's got bugs.
Yeah, but those ants are like 1 foot long. Yeah, the scolipede is 8 feet long. So almost 3 meters.
No, but I mean like in the movies or in like, and the thing like that, like, do any characters ever get a mosquito bite or like, you know, nope. Do they complain about like nothing? Okay.
Nope.
How does the food chain work in this world?
That's another interesting point, because you have, at least in the games, you don't really feed them. There's these things called berries, which you can give your Pokemon. There's different flavors of berries, which you can like give them certain bonuses for a certain amount of time as far as combat goes again. But there are... Some of these Pokemon are obviously carnivores just by looking at them. And there's also mentions in what's called the Pokedex, the Pokemon Encyclopedia, or you know whatever you want to call it. It's all called a Pokedex. And it has information on every single Pokemon, especially when you catch them. And some of them specifically mention how they catch Pokemon. Like Fearow, which is the... We saw them in the movie towards the beginning. It shoots itself high into the sky, then plummets down in one fell swoop to catch its prey. Doesn't say what the prey is, but there are no real-world animals in this world. There are only Pokemon. And then there's Pidgeot, which we also saw at the beginning of the movie. Those brown birds with the long red and yellow head feathers. When hunting, it skims the surface of water at high speed to pick off unwary prey such as Magikarp. Which is that floppy red one. Yeah.
So they are eating each other then?
They have to be, yeah.
Okay, but I mean, at the base of the food chain here, you still have to have small little things. Like, what's Magikarp eating, for instance? That thing's going to be eating, like, larvae.
There have to be zooplankton Pokemon that we just don't see.
Yeah, okay. This world fascinates me. Like, I mean, it horrifies me, but it fascinates me. Now, moving on to that horror, how the fuck do humans evolve in this world? Like, you just have fauna roaming
there
around.
There is megafauna.
All the ability to attack anything. Oh, yeah, I saw some megafauna in there, but, like, how does intelligent life evolve in this world where everything can kill you and there's no escape from it? Every niche is occupied by something with... capable of doing damage. It's like Australia, but worse.
Yeah, I think the only way to just explain that I just thought of is some kind of case where maybe the people that live in this Pokemon world are not from this planet originally. They somehow have made it there. Maybe they've kind of forgotten that they're not native to this planet, but now they've been living there so long, their kind of cultural memory has moved on to a point where they think they are native to this world. Because with these things, even with there being primate-looking Pokemon, there is no feasible mechanism for humans to have evolved in this world.
Yeah. It reminds me of... So I might have talked about this before. There's this book I read by Ursula Le Guin, who's a science fiction writer. And it's kind of almost a study of social anthropology. It's this this culture that this person lands on, and they're trying to document the culture. And the inhabitants of this planet are living on a world where there is no primates whatsoever. The largest animal you have on this planet is like kind of a little fox-like thing, right? Now, how would you believe in anything other than, you know, religion or a creation sort of myth on a planet like that? Because, yeah, you would never have any concept of, oh, we evolved from this thing.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense otherwise. And
yeah.
Ever since you asked me that question the other day in our little group chat about this, I had never even thought about it, but how the fuck do humans evolve in this world? It just...
Yeah.
They don't.
Because, I mean, yeah, we standing upright, coming down from the trees, all that kind of... I mean, that serves no advantage in this world.
Mm-mm.
Whatsoever. I mean, the trees seem like they're the safest place for anything to be. Are there, like, primate Pokemon that climb up there and could fuck you up?
Yep. I mean, we see it in the movie. Those little apoms, those little monkeys with the hand tails.
Just this sounds like a nightmare world.
It would be, especially if we're looking at primates and just thinking you could hide on the tree. There are these two Pokemon, at least from the original games, you don't see them as much more in the later games, called Primeape and... Primeape and... One second... Mankey. So Mankey is the original form, Primeape is the evolved form, and these two Pokemon are... They're supposed to be apes. I mean, it's in the name, Mankey, Primeape, but these little fuzzballs that are fighting types... And they are full of rage. They're always attacking everything. And one of the common lines in the animated show was Ash had a primate and it always fought him whenever he tried to like bring it out to fight other Pokemon. It would just turn around and start beating him up.
Yeah, well, that brings us on to our next question. The domestication here is kind of fucked. Like, if you were just going out and capturing wild Pokemon and releasing them and expecting them to fight, yeah, there's a good chance it'll turn around and beat the crap out of you. And why wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
How does domestication work here?
This is something, at least speaking from the games aspect, in the movie, it seems like there is, they kind of touch on it where it's like, you know, the Pokemon has to choose you, blah, 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 where you see Justice Smith try to capture this Cubone, which I can touch, remind me to touch on that here in a second. They did a really good representation of that Pokemon. But in the games, you kind of gain badges by beating gym leaders, people that have more powerful Pokemon than you, all of one type, so it's really easy to just stack your team to beat them. But anyway, once you get a badge from beating them, like all Pokemon level 10 and below will obey you, all Pokemon 20 and below will obey you, blah, blah, blah. Okay. But if you don't have that badge and you have too high of a level of Pokemon, they more often than not, they won't do what you tell them to do. You try to get them to attack, they won't do it. You try to get them to do something, they'll go to sleep, or they won't even come out of the ball sometimes. So I think it's a matter of there is some kind of domestication that happens within the technology of the Pokeball itself, which turns the Pokemon into a laser and shrinks them into the ball, however that works. But then it's something about the pure force of will of the trainer themselves, that is able to kind of wrangle and dominate these creatures.
It sounds very unethical.
It is very unethical.
Yeah. This is a really cutthroat world.
It is. Speaking about unethical, a little tangent. My brother is a huge fan of the series called Monster Hunter, which is a bit different than Pokemon, where it's these big open world games. You go out and you literally just kill these giant dinosaur looking creatures, and you harvest their bodies, make better armor, hunt bigger creatures. And a new game came out last year. It's the latest one in the series. It's one of the biggest, most beautiful games they've made. And my brother was so excited to get it. He opened it up. He played it. He had just started playing it. And a former postdoc came over, and he saw Peter playing and said, "So what are you doing?" "So I'm hunting these monsters." He goes, "Why?" He said, "Oh, just so I can get them." He said, "But why? What do they do to you? Why are you killing them?" And he's like, And just watching him shut down from his pure level of excitement to having a moral dilemma and questioning his entire life choice of hunting these fictional creatures was one of my favorite moments I've ever seen. Yeah. And now I'm thinking the same thing about Pokemon. It's like, why do we do this? We're making them beat the shit out of each other.
Okay, so that takes care of that. Another horrifying aspect of this world. But one interesting thing I did come across in my research, I'm doing quotation marks here, the concept of Alola. Can you take me through that?
So Alola was an island region. So backing up a little bit, for all these different games, you had them set in a specific region. So the original Pokemon was set in the Kanto region. And you got on to like the Johto, the Sinnoh. There's all these different quote-unquote areas of this world that you go to that are like the new games are set in. So that's kind of the narrative device they use to explain these different Pokemon popping up. And then the game that came out 2 or 3 years ago was called Sun and Moon. And these games were set in the island of Alola, which is obviously based off of Hawaii. And then on this island, you have a lot of the Pokemon you saw beforehand. But then you have these Alola variants, these Pokemon that are the same Pokemon, but they look different than their mainland counterparts. And they also sometimes have different types and different abilities to their mainland counterparts.
Yeah. And see, that is an interesting concept because, I mean, if you're isolated from the main population, you are definitely going to undergo changes. But none of the changes these Pokemon seem to undergo are characteristic of what happens to species on islands. Typical kind of island biogeography says a few things. A, that species who migrate to islands are going to have very different kind of population. The communities on islands are going to have very different levels of fluctuation. So, for instance, one species that's at a very low level on the mainland might be released from competition or with competitors. It might be released from predators as well. And so it might grow larger. Populations might explode. So you'll have different levels of abundances and densities in different species. Often species will become a lot tamer because they're released from predators.
Yep.
So for instance, if you've ever heard the tale of Darwin's fox, it's this fox species that Darwin found on an island, and they were so tame that he was able to collect the type specimen of this species by just walking up and bonking it on its head and killing it. Great man, Darwin. Fucked his cousin, by the way.
Yeah,
definitely did. Survival of the fittest and all that. Anyway, so They grow a lot tamer and more naive on islands. Some species grow larger, some other species grow smaller. All these species, though, that have evolved on Alola, the ones that I went through, a lot of them seem to have gotten darker, which can happen if the... I mean, Gloja's rule suggests that if you go further north in latitude or further south, your skin color might change. But they all seem the exact same size. They don't seem any bigger or smaller. there doesn't
some
to be
are
too much of a difference?
Some are quite a bit different. So the most obvious one as far as size being the Executor, which is, in the normal games, it looks like a big fat palm tree with multiple coconut heads. In the on Alola, Executor is something like 20 or 30 feet tall with this gigantic neck, so it looks like a real palm tree. And a lot of these variants, a lot of these changes are kind of done to make it look like a more quote-unquote tropical thing. So Pikachu in the games evolves into what's called a Raichu if you touch him with a Thunderstone. And Raichu is normally just an electric type, just like Pikachu is. But on Alola, it is a psychic and electric type, and it like kind of floats on its tail like a surfboard.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Well, that's, you know, that's one example of something hitting the island rule, which is, like I said, variations in size. But, yeah, the rest, I mean, it just... Look, it's an interesting concept.
Yep.
But, you know, they should have had a biogeographer on board, is what I'm saying. So, well, let's touch on the evolution at this point, then. I mean, their concept of evolution very much reflects just different stages in life history, different metamorphoses that these species go through.
Yep. Yeah, so it's very much just a case of them looking for a convenient word to show these Pokemon changing from one stage to another. And a lot of Pokemon will only have, they don't evolve, it's just what you see is what you get. Then quite a few of them will go from like a first form to a second form, kind of like that Mankey Primeape example, or a Pikachu and Raichu. But then the most powerful ones, usually the ones that have the most change, are going to evolve twice. Like you have with Bulbasaur going to Ivysaur, going to Venusaur, Charmander to Charmeleon to Charizard, Squirtle, Wartortle to Blastoise. And then you even have some, kind of what we touched on with, I think Dave had this in his physiology section, at least in the raw discussion, you can use these stones to induce evolution of specific Pokemon into specific types. The big example of that one being this Pokemon called Eevee. It looks like a cat, kind of like a cat-puppy mix. And you see this in the kind of towards the beginning of the third act in the movie, where you have Eevee on a Dex, which turns into Flareon. But Eevee, you know, short for Eevee Evolution, it can go from its normal cat type to, I think, 9 different types now, depending on what kind of stone you touch it with.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the Wikipedia page here. It evolves to Espeon, Umbreon, Sylveon, Vaporeon, Flareon, Jolteon, Leafeon, Glaceon.
Yep.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, real nerd shit.
Looks like it's turning into a seal.
That would be Vaporeon.
Yeah.
So the easiest
I mean, that's interesting enough as it is. Like, just having this one species. Well, no, a bunch of different species, presumably, where the, like, the larvae or the juvenile form will look exactly the same.
Yeah, or at least with these different ones, like Eevee being a hyperplastic individual, this individual where you have the same genotype but different phenotypes depending on the environment it's in or whatever kind of mutation it's exposed to. I think, at least for these stones, this kind of points towards these stones and the technology, the Pokeballs themselves, I think kind of points towards humans being some kind of advanced civilization that has moved to this world and then has somehow forgotten what they were. But otherwise, this is just a... kind of maybe a narrative device to show these different species going through different life stages.
Yeah. And it is. I mean, the life stages that they go through, for the most part, are totally fine. There's some glaring exceptions. So the ones I found were, I think, what was it? Machamp, that grows an extra set of limbs?
Yep, there's Machamp. There's Machop, Machoke, and Machamp. So Machop is a little, kind of little tubby-looking dude with 2 arms and 2 legs. Then it goes into Machoke, which is a big burly dude with 2 arms and 2 legs. And then it comes into Machamp, which is a bigger burly dude with 4 arms and 2 legs.
Yeah. And then there's the same deal with Crobat, I think it is.
Yep, Zubat to Golbat to Crobat.
Yes, and then...
they also grow eyes.
There's also another one. Yeah. Yeah. I had some weird ones down. So Blastoise has guns on its back, but then Adam came in and said, yeah, but there's also ghosts there. And I really enjoy this one. And a literal keychain.
That is the dumbest fucking Pokemon I've ever seen in my life. It is a...
Well,
look it up.
What's it called?
Oh, let me find this. Klefki. It's called Klefki.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is an actual keychain.
So yeah, it's a... Klefki is a literal... It's a fairy steel type. But it is a literal ring of keys. There is also a...
Is that a form of Crypsis? Is it trying to blend in with other people's keychains?
I think so. I don't know where you would normally find... I don't remember where you would find these in the environment. I don't think they're really inhabiting people's, hangers by their doors or their tables, but it would be an effective form of Crypsis in a urban environment.
I mean, the evolution of these species must be so insane. Like, the selection pressures in this world must be so high. Like I said, this they is have a to terrifying be. World. Like, you know how there was that After Earth trailer where Will Smith's voiceover is just like, every being on this planet has evolved to kill you. That is the world of Pokemon.
Yeah, so I'm going to kind of put some things out there, and you can probably put these pieces together to kind of see where I'm going. But in the world of Pokemon, especially in the original ones, there aren't really any adults. You really only see young kids becoming trainers. Or, okay. Like, older, much older people as, like, professors, librarians, people working at the Pokemon centers, the hospitals, or Professor Oak himself being an old, crazy guy sending these kids out in the world to go catch Pokemon. But you really don't see people around our age too much, from that kind of that early 20s to late 40s, 50s age.
Do we think this is Logan's Run? Like, when you get to a certain age, they just kill you and feed you to the Pokemon to keep them docile?
If only. In the original games, one of the gym leaders is a guy called Lieutenant Surge, who is, as his name implies, runs an electric-type gym, but he's also very military-themed, and they mention him using his Pokemon in the war. So what this all implies is that there was some massive, crazy war that wiped out most of the people of the, kind of that middle age range, where they used Pokemon in battle, killing people.
Okay.
And that's kind of one of the darker, quote-unquote, theories of how this world kind of worked and why you don't see people, why you don't see parents, why Ash doesn't have a dad in the original show or games, why you don't really see too many people our age, why it's only old people or really, really young kids.
Shit, okay, yeah, that's horrifying.
Yeah. And there's other dark shit, like in the... So, Cubone, that first Pokemon we see in the movie that Joseph Smith tries to catch, it is sitting there crying. And that Pokemon is classically a very, very sad Pokemon because it is literally wearing the skull of its mother on its head. And it's rough. And you can try to catch this guy, or at least the ghost of a Marowak, which is a Cubone's mom, in the original game in this one town that is known as like a Pokemon graveyard. And in that game, in that tower, you run into your rival, Gary, or Blue in the games. And you fight him there, and he's saying that he's there to kind of take care of one of his Pokemon. And the last time you fought him, before you went to this town, you beat one of his Pokemon really badly, and he had to take it back. Which also implies you killed his Pokemon, and he was there to bury it.
God damn.
Mm-hmm.
This shit's real dark. Do we think that war was perhaps like, we were talking about perhaps these people were colonizers of this planet? Do you think maybe this war was like the original population coming back, seeing how fucked up the colonizers had gotten, and just like being, okay, well, we got to wipe these motherfuckers out?
I don't know. I think maybe it'd just be more a form of tribalism where the different nation states, whatever it is, kind of fighting against one another. Because you had these very different regions from one another, even though, at least in the original games, everyone's white.
Yeah. I did notice that, yeah. It's kind of one of these things where I know it's a Japanese creation, so I'm not sure what race anyone is supposed to be.
Right, it's one of those things like in an anime where everyone has different colored hair, but they're all still white. But are they Japanese? But they're speaking English. But at least in the later games, there's quite a variety of skin tones, and you can also choose, you know, your gender in the games.
Okay. Right, the last thing I had that we already touched on earlier is that Pokemon must be eating each other.
Yep.
And we know that is true. Yep. Because some of these adaptations, you can't just have a world full of predators. Like some of the adaptations they have must just be purely for defense.
Yeah.
What I'm interested though is that in our world you have a lot of creatures where their only defense is the fact they stick together in herds or they're just really big.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't seem... I mean, there are big Pokemon, but they've still got these crazy defenses. Are there Pokemon where they congregate in really large herds?
Yeah, so in the Pokedex, they mentioned Pikachu for being a prime example. They kind of live in small, like, social groups. There is a Pokemon called a Taurus, which is this giant bull-looking dude. Not the one you see in the movie. That's a different one. But those live together in herds. You have Butterfree, which is a butterfly Pokemon, obviously. They fly in swarms. Beedrills, which are these wasp-looking Pokemon, they also fly in swarms. You have, I think the Bulbasaurs will also travel in packs, even though they're
okay.
They're, I don't know if they're herbivores or if they're actually primary producers because they have a plant on their back. They're weird. What other ones? Magikarp will swim in schools. You'll have, in, especially in the later games, you will literally run into like swarms of Pokemon where you'll be attacked by five or six of them at once instead of just one, like normally. Like really? Normal.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right, well, look, that kind of answers all the questions I have. I think this world is a horrifying, nightmare-filled place that you should never visit. And I think this is a prime candidate for a horror movie.
You know, it could be a really, really good one, especially with all these different ghosts and psychic Pokemon, which could fuck you up royally. In the in the original animated series, which is on Netflix in the US right now, we actually watched this episode last week. There's an episode where Ash goes to this haunted house where the ghost Pokemon just want to play and they want a friend. So they take Ash's soul out of his body to play with him.
Oh my god. Whew, that is dark.
Don't know how many times I've been crossed off the list and left for dead. Guess when it first happens, the day you were born, you're gonna lose count. So this ain't nothing new.
Okay, all right. Well, I think you've done a pretty good job of answering my questions, Adam. Moving on to the verses. In the spirit of how awful and how terrifying I find the world of Pokemon, for our verses this week, I would like to put Vin Diesel's Riddick on the Pokemon world and challenge him to survive for 48 hours.
Whew, okay.
Adam, how do you think he'd do?
What type of area is he in?
Forest.
He's fucked.
Yeah. Okay.
There are in
Savannah.
The forest. There are
Savannah.
Savannah. Yeah. I don't know if you ever see a Savannah ecosystem in the games.
Have you seen not Pitch Black, not Chronicles of Riddick, the third one? Just Riddick. I think it's called.
Riddick.
Yeah. Okay. That sort of area.
Okay. There's
so
kind of
desert,
like a
cliff,
deserty plain area. He's still fucked. There are in those rocky areas, there are Pokemon called Onyx, which are these like 20, 30 foot long stone snakes that would just crush him.
Okay, yeah, well, goodbye Vin Diesel then. Good riddance.
Yep. I think going with your original one, kind of for fun versus later on, we could use an example of my favorite Pokemon growing up. If you're in the forest, you're going to run into these things called Scythers, which are these 4 foot, you know, about a meter, 1.3 meter tall praying mantis based organisms that have literal swords for arms that move at really, really high speeds would slice him to pieces. And those also fly in swarms. So a swarm of Scythers will be our fun little verses for the grand final later on.
Scyther. Oh, yeah, that's horrifying. Okay, all right. Well, look, I think that about wraps it up. We will be back next week looking at the physiology of Pikachu with Dave.
Yep.
But until then, everybody, before Adam takes us home, if you are not watching Eurovision this weekend, you are dead to us.
Yep.
Yep. It's one of the best parts of the year. I highly recommend getting on that Eurovision hype train this year. And yeah, Adam, that aside, you want to take us home?
Absolutely. You can find Sam and I on Twitter. Sam is at SamParrinNTNU. I'm at HasekAdam. You can find the podcast at C_Animalia. Check out our website, CinematicaAnimalia.com. Questions, comments, or concerns, or suggestions, Cinematica.Animalia@gmail.com. If you want to see more of the hard science that Sam and I do, check out EcologyForTheMasses.com. And remember, the monsters aren't real, but the science is.
Bye-bye.